Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up this week, Google ditches the idea of buying a newspaper, but how can the internet giant help in the tricky business of monetizing online news? Plus, never mind the newspapers, we analyse the escalating crisis at ITN. Also in the podcast,
we are not actually here,
no.
If you get my gist. Okay, we're here,
but
you're listening to us and stuff, but we're not doing this live today.
If Britain's best paid broadcaster can't be trusted to do a live radio show, we ask, isn't it time the BBC tore up Jonathan Ross's £6 million a year contract? And
my name is Susan Boyle, I am 47. I've never been given the chance before, but here's hoping it'll change.
Will the hairy angel croon her way to glory in the final of Britain's Got Talent? This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, a new study from the Department of Health this week reveals that media types consume more alcohol than any other type of professionals. So with that in mind, let me introduce your panel. John Plunkett is a Media Guardian's radio correspondent and rarely seen without Ringwood's old thumper in his hand.
And I like a drink.
And you like a drink, yeah. Yes. Excellent. Returning to the pod after almost, 9 months away, we think, it's the cocktail queen, Janine Gibson, executive editor of Guardian.co.uk. Good to have you back, Janine.
I've been in rehab.
Yes, that's it. Well, with our pork scratchings and beer mats at the ready, let's get things going.
Media Talk with Matt Wells on Guardian.co.uk.
We start this week with the digital divide and the speculation that Google is to dip its toe into the newspaper business. There has been talk for some months now that the search engine provider might use its considerable resources to save the debt-ridden New York Times. In an interview with FT.com, Eric Schmidt, Google's chairman and chief executive, played down some of that speculation, saying what he wanted to do was avoid blurring the line between technology and content. However, Schmidt said that it doesn't mean that Google won't sprinkle its magic making elsewhere in the industry.
With a number of newspapers, and the Washington Post being an example, we are very interested in trying to develop online news versions that somehow address the immediate needs of people and for which advertising works better. Without commenting specifically about products, it seems to me that the newspaper that I read online should remember what I read. It should allow me to go deeper into the stories. It's that kind of a discussion that we're having.
He went on to talk about Google News and specifically the complaints that Google doesn't share the revenues, or at least enough of the revenues it generates from other people's news content.
Well, we've decided that the value we provide to the partners is the traffic. And so we want to provide incredible numbers of users going to their sites, their content, which is why we urge them to make it deeper, stronger, use better tools, and so forth. From our perspective, that's where the real source would be. In our model and what we're doing today, the vast majority of the revenue that comes directly from reading newspapers, in fact, goes to them through all these mechanisms. The real issue here is that when people are reading the news online, we are not monetizing it in aggregate. So if we were to transfer money, we would be taking money from something unrelated to newspapers and just paying them, which doesn't seem like a good sustainable model for anybody.
And don't you think that there's a risk for you as well if you fail to find perhaps more of a revenue sharing model, say with something like Google News? Your sources of news for that service that you provide will just dry up. You risk killing the goose that's laying the golden egg.
Well, this is the codependence that we were talking about earlier. From our perspective, we depend on the production of very, very high quality content. If the people who are producing that are getting laid off, it's really a tragedy for both. So we need that high quality content. There's a debate in the industry of exactly how to get it. But ultimately, the problem is not us taking money from some other pocket and subsidizing it. Ultimately, the solution is to build products that really are so good that we make enough money from advertising and subscriptions to the degree that they make sense, that there's enough money to really pay for the construction of this high-quality content.
Google's Eric Schmidt there, speaking to the FT's Chrystia Freeland, and the full video interview is on FT.com. Very good it is, too. Janine, what do you make of that? Google is often seen as the nemesis of newspapers. Could it be their savior?
Well, the first thing I think is that that's probably the most that Eric Schmidt has ever thought about how to support newspapers ever in his life.
Yes.
And I think he did a good job of trying to take it seriously.
Yes.
Through the interview. I'm not sure how very seriously Google considered buying a newspaper ever, because why would you?
Because as he said, also in that interview, what they don't, what they've all, the thing about Google is they've always tried to avoid being a platform or being a technology company, and what they are is a gateway.
More brutally, why would they spend any money investing in creating content? They've never had to. They can just point to it and take advertising revenue off being a route finder. So they don't need to get into the messy business of funding and creating it. I was sort of intrigued by him saying that he was worried about local newspaper, that sort of keeping the mayor honest reporting he refers to, and they don't know how they're going to fund that. And that basically is what it boils down to. Google, you know, they have a PR crisis around media. They don't want to look bad. They want to look concerned and look as if they are taking this seriously. Because what they really fear is what happened to Microsoft, the antitrust legislation. You know,
because they are so dominant.
What they fear is regulation. They don't fear the collapse of newspapers. They can.
Why would they care?
What they fear is regulation.
This is a very interesting point, John, that Janine raises about the whole PR thing, because in newspaper land, many people see Google as their downfall, don't they? And the reason why, they like to blame somebody else rather than themselves, and Google's an easy target, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. And the same journalists obviously use Google every day to inform them and get the information about for the stories they're writing. I think Schmidt said there about he didn't want to blur the line between technology and content, but I think that what's got to happen somewhere is that the line's got to be blurred between loss making and profit making, and clearly he doesn't want to cross that line. But he did say that there was a real codependence between something like Google and Google News and these high quality sources of news. And if newspapers and news websites can't make money, then that's going to become a real issue, not only for newspapers, but for Google as well, because it will have no sources, ultimately, no sources of content to point users to.
Well, this PR crisis that you talk of, Janine, that Google has got, it's not just Google that has got it, is it? There's been a bit of a backlash against Craigslist this week. They say that they're the victim of a witch hunt by politicians and a hypocritical media. This is all to do with the erotic services ads, so-called.
Hookers.
I'm just trying to delicately, you know, tiptoe my way around this. But, yes, if you want to put it that way, that's what it is. Any sympathy with them?
With Craigslist?
Or is it part of that same PR
problem? Why would I have sympathy with them? I mean, I think it's very interesting that these big digital companies now have sufficient profile that they have things to be defensive about. And what's very interesting, in a relatively short period of time, they've gone from being the chippy outsiders who were sort of shrugging their shoulders, didn't bother to talk to anybody or have a statement or have a press office or anything like that, just sort of creamed off revenue, and the big media institutions were all terrified of them. And we've all spent a lot of time trying to second guess Google or trying to work out what their algorithm means and what that means for us and so on. And with Craigslist, a lot of media organizations spent a lot of time working out what that model of classified advertising meant for their infrastructure and the way they would fund themselves. Interestingly, you know, they are now relatively big companies with revenues and shareholders and various people that they have to keep happy and their own PR issues. And they're sort of finding out what it's like to a largely unsympathetic media.
Yeah, I guess it's not surprising that the media doesn't have any sympathy with people like Craigslist.
That's right, because they've been stealing revenue that traditional media have had a monopoly on for years. That's right.
Yeah. But
they didn't steal it. It wasn't ours. You know, it wasn't ours to keep. It wasn't sort of in the. They didn't steal it. They came across and found
a better
way of serving classified advertising. I wouldn't say. I mean, I don't want to slander any local newspaper, but isn't there quite a long tradition of, you know, massage services in the back of fairly, you know, mainstream.
I do remember my experience. We had a complaint from a reader who had a genuine leg injury, a muscle tear, and he went to a massage service at the back of the Medway News, I think it was, and was shocked to find out that it wasn't quite the service. I think it might have been the Medway News and Standard, which might not exist anymore.
And we were shocked to discover,
possibly because of Craigslist.
Probably not Craigslist, but whatever the Medway equivalent of Craigslist is. What's going on at the New York Times? There's a bit of a massive crisis at the New York Times. They seem to have absolutely no money whatsoever, and they're calling in the Mexicans, as far as I can tell.
Well, they've had a big debt issue at the New York Times for some time, and they've been making various pronouncements about how they might want to look at charging for some content and perhaps going back down something like the model that they used to do with New York Times Select.
But interesting, back to Eric Schmidt in that interview, he said that that's not going to work.
Well, he pretty much explicitly says the New York Times isn't going to get away with charging for, you know, quality versions of ordinary news, which is a bit damning. But he's probably not wrong. Actually, the New York Times was given a bit of a backhanded compliment by old Carlos Slim, I think. He said he really massively regretted buying his 19% of the Independent, whatever it was, for several million. But that the New York Times was all right. That was a quality brand.
That was a quality
going downhill a bit slower.
I'm just waiting for the backlash to Twitter, of course, and we'll all be screwed then, won't we?
Twitter at the moment, everybody can love Twitter in a wholehearted way. I think sometimes to the irritation of our users, because essentially they are a service that allows us to tell people about our content and then people to come and find our content, and they're not nicking any money for it. How refreshing.
Absolutely.
And if there is a backlash against Twitter, it'll be in fewer than 140 characters.
Yes, very good. Now, leaving Google and online newspapers aside for now, there's some pretty awful news coming out of ITN, and we don't mean the ropey two ways on News at 10. ITN's future has been placed into serious doubt after its annual report was published this week, and the numbers weren't good, as Maggie Brown's been doing some digging for MediaGuardian.co.uk. She's dug up the figures that show a pension deficit of almost £40 million, and with an added warning that the contributions required from the company to meet the shortfall may be, quote, in excess of its cash resources, unquote. Not a good quote. Janine, we know that Channel 4 and ITV, both of whom get their news from ITN, are both under financial pressure of their own. I mean, this is not good for anyone, is it?
It doesn't look good. Now, I kind of understand now why I haven't been here for 9 months. It's just the media is dying.
Yes.
Oh, more bad news then. Yeah.
This is pretty much what it's like every week, Janine.
Is it?
Yeah.
I might leave a couple of months before I come back. It doesn't look great for ITN. I mean, it wasn't a business model that looked particularly safe for a few years. Hmm. They always had too few clients, potentially. It was too small a business, and there was not much way to diversify. They attempted to get into the channel business with Euronews, and they
the
attempted
ITV
to get into archiving and selling off their own programmes.
Yeah.
But these were, you know, relatively small. The vast majority of their revenue has always been from these two main clients. And they were always vulnerable to, you know, a bid from Sky News that came in and undercut them. But this is, I mean, this is the equivalent of the debt bomb behind the New York Times or the Indie. If you've got an enormous, I believe Trinity Mirror and a couple of other, ITV have got terrible troubles with their pension.
Yeah,
I mean, pension deficits are the new bonds. You know, these are the mounting deadlines that make you look bad. I mean, there was rumours this week that Getty were going to make a bid for them, which I didn't read the whole thing, but you sort of looked at the headline and thought,
For ITN, that would be very bad news if ITN got taken over by a picture agency, wouldn't it?
It certainly won't happen now if Getty have read Maggie's report. I think they literally can't bid for it with these pension deficits that they've got to handle. I mean, I remember sort of 10 years ago, ITN was described to me as a perfectly healthy patient, but one that could die at any moment, which is reflects its peculiar structure where if ITV walked away, if it lost that news contract to Sky, it would be screwed, you know, and to an extent, Channel 4. And we've seen over the last 10 years its business base has been chipped away, and those efforts to diversify just haven't happened.
And it now looks as if Channel 4 is looking to cut costs as well. It looks as if, you know, More 4 News and the Channel 4 lunchtime news, they look to be at risk as well.
Which is a great shame, I mean, which is, I guess, Channel 4 News is the real jewel in the crown.
Yeah, but what's the point of More 4 News? It's all at the same time as Channel 4 Plus 1 News. I've said this before, haven't I? I shan't go on, but I just never see the point of it.
More 4 News was a way to make More 4 look more acceptable. More 4 News was, much like Channel 4 News is for the main channel, More 4 News was the fig leaf off which you hang. We're going to launch a new channel now, thank you very much.
Yeah. Will this? I mean, you could see, it does look as if it is possible now that we'll end up with two main news providers in the country, and one of them won't be ITN, it'll be BBC and Sky.
Yeah, it's the old £800 gorillas. Mm. In a way, this isn't anything new. We've been talking about this for the last 5 years, but it suddenly becomes... Interestingly, we did think it would be Sky that forced ITN out. We didn't really think it would be this sort of almost suicidal financial collapse.
Maybe Sky will buy ITN.
Well, well, that would be interesting.
But why would they do that again?
Yeah,
why would anybody buy ITN? They wouldn't have to.
Because all they would need to do is see ITN go down the pan and then come in as the white knight in shining armour and take up the price
for providing new services. Because at the moment, Sky's role is to undercut ITN.
Absolutely. Well, there we go. There's our prediction. See if it happens in a year's time. We'll leave that there. If you want to have your say, leave a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Well, perhaps we should lighten the mood after all that doom and glooming. John and Janine, there are a few other tidbits out there this week. Simon Heffer, John, it looks as if he's going to stand for Parliament.
Vote Heffer. that's right, yes. Unless his local Tory MP stands down. In fact, unless his local Tory MP pays back £12,000 in expenses, Heffer is going to...
And he's serious. He says he's serious about it. So, we should take note.
He says he may not win because the incumbent has a 13,000 majority. So I think he does well to err on the side of caution there.
Can you imagine the Heffer lump in Parliament, on the front bench?
I'm very much hoping he will be joining the list of media figures considering standing against MPs tainted by the expenses scandal.
Go on, then.
Shall I just remind
you? Yeah, please.
Those who've come out so far: Esther Ranson,
yes;
Robert Harris, Lynn Foldswood.
Oh yes, that
and David Van Day.
Now, what a party they would make.
This is not my line. I read it somewhere, but it is basically an I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here reunion in the old House of Commons.
Celebrity Big Parliament. And all these MPs are going to end up on a dodgy Channel 4 reality show.
Absolutely. Now, Sky News is beefing up its business team. They've hired, as their answer to Robert Peston, the Sunday Telegraph's Mark Kleinman, our city editor. Does anyone know who Mark Kleinman is? Have you heard of Mark Kleinman? You can say no. You're not allowed to talk. It's not a trick question, Janine.
Oh, I don't want to be rude.
No, but this is the point I'm making.
I think you're being very mean. Good luck to him.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Good luck to him. Davina McCall's been talking about her...
Okay, if we want to be mean...
Yeah, go on. Davina McCall has been talking about this idea she's got for a chat show. She's been hawking it around, poor love, the broadcasters, hasn't she? But I fear that the broadcasters may have been looking at her track record in this area.
Well, it comes to something when you say it'll be either on 5 or Sky 1, and both 5 and Sky 1 categorically say no.
There's always
no, it really won't.
Could be Living, perhaps, or or Diva TV.
This is what the internet's made for, isn't it? YouTube.
What is it about Davina and her? She's seen as a great presenter. Everyone loves her on Big Brother. But why can't she?
I don't think she is seen as a great presenter. No, I think she was seen as a great presenter for about 5 minutes, and then she did Big Brother, and then after about 3 seasons of Big Brother, everybody got fed up with her shouting.
Yes, well, that is possibly true. It is a bumper week for ITV, potentially. We've seen all the adverts. It's a week of finals. Britain's Got Talent final, Champions League final. Could finally ITV be... Well, they could use it to plug the pension gap, all this money that they're going to make, perhaps. £30 million, apparently. Did you watch the Champions League final, John?
I did, yeah. I watched it on Sky, actually. Yeah, I had a few issues with my ITV picture, and I believe I wasn't alone in the quality of the picture.
No, really. Yeah. They always screw up on these big football finals.
They cut to an ad break at half-time, which infuriated me.
Yes. For more on all these stories, plenty more, head to mediaguardian.co.uk.
We are not actually here,
no.
If you get my gist, okay? We're here...
But
you're listening
not.
To us and stuff, but we're not doing this live today.
No.
Okay, we're not actually doing it live.
Yeah. So don't come round looking for us because we were not here.
But exciting news. Next week there's going to be a brand new quiz.
Yes.
Okay, and there's going to be a brand new method of applying as well, which I'm going to tell you about now.
Yep. If okay, like hands up. We did miss the story last week. It did break in our time, yeah. But we didn't get onto it quick enough. That's only added to my outrage, actually. It's the news that senior management at Radio 2 have decided that Jonathan Ross's Saturday morning show will no longer be broadcast live. It follows another on-air gaffe, this time some pretty tasteless comments from Jonathan Ross that even Chris Moyles might have deemed a touch too homophobic. John, this is it is interesting, isn't it, that they now have decided that Jonathan Ross can't be trusted with a live radio show, so it's going to be pre-recorded.
It does. It makes you wonder what the point is, really. I mean, part of the fun of Ross is listening to him, and with the potential for the occasional on-air gaffe, and you can always tell when a radio show isn't live. And I heard bits of the show on Saturday, which was the first one that was pre-recorded.
Oh, yes. How are they going to do their competitions?
And, That's one issue.
Never stopped any radio show before.
Well, yes. It's the magic of radio.
Yes.
But also there was a lack of spark, and I don't know, maybe it was just an off show anyway, but it didn't feel like I had the same energy and enthusiasm that it does normally.
Well, whether or not you think what his comment was tasteless or bad, or you shouldn't have done it or not, I just think they should have either decided, yeah, it's a back him or sack him thing, isn't it?
It completely is. From the moment the brand thing broke, they didn't look comfortable having Jonathan Ross. They don't know what to do with him. They're stuck with him now. They've got this contract. They don't want to have a big lawsuit over ending it, and they are stuck with what, you know, he's a very talented broadcaster, but they are no longer comfortable with him. So they are in all sorts of pain around this, and the pre-recording of a show is just a pathetic cop-out.
It really doesn't work.
Well, because it didn't save them with the Russell Brand show. That was pre-recorded.
That's right, it was pre-recorded. Yeah, that was half the problem, in fact, because they felt off the leash.
And Matthew Bannister makes a really good point, which is that stuff that happens live, you are more forgiving of. And actually, as a pre-record, the sense that there's been a conscious decision to allow something near the knuckle goes out looks much, much more controversial. They're making more problems for themselves.
Yeah, because you could say, look, you know, it was an off-the-cuff remark, it was a joke, you know, we've all been there, we started off on a joke, you get to the end of it, you think, where was that going? That was the worst joke I've ever made.
Every week.
Answer me all the time. But it is true, isn't it? And you know, if it is live, this is a very good point that Ginny makes, if it's live, you can say, well, I'm sorry, it came out the wrong way and I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, and I think it's got echoes of Chris Evans and TFI Friday in the 90s when he went too far, or some of his guests went too far, and they pre-recorded that. But it was kind of the beginning of the end, really, slippery slope.
Yeah.
Well, do you think it is the beginning of the end of Jonathan Ross on the radio, or even on television? I mean, his contract must be up for renewal at some point.
It's so hard to watch him in an unknowing way now, or to listen to him in an unknowing way. And the radio show has lost some of its charm. I don't know if it's psychological or if it's genuine, but it doesn't feel the same. I can't, and it would be a terrible shame. It would be best if he went away for a bit and then came back, which he has done before, and everyone can remember how good he is. Well, I think he should stand for Parliament.
Maybe he could join Lynn Fieldswood and the rest of them in Parliament. That's what to do. Now, on the blogs, Renaissance Moran, who's often got a good word, often has a sensible word to say about all these things, says, a confident broadcaster should have a much better relationship with his talent. Ross should be able to do what he does in the knowledge that he's supported and protected from a fall by his management structure. First, they failed to provide a safety net. Now they're taking the rope away, and they genuinely think it's Ross who's in the wrong. Very good point. You had a Jonathan Ross joke, Janine, apparently.
I've made it. If you missed it, then that's it.
Did you make it? did you make a joke and I missed it?
Yes.
Did you get it?
It wasn't really a joke. It was a wry aside. You should stand for Parliament.
Well, I see. No. Well, it is a wry aside.
It was a wry aside.
I was expecting a punchline, but there you are.
No, you fundamentally misunderstood me. I do think that there is a thing about Jonathan Ross, though, which is the stuff that he's been doing on Twitter ever since he got suspended, and the way he has developed a relationship directly with his kind of fans, viewers, listeners.
Does he need a broadcaster?
He would be the person who I would exactly think would feel quite empowered enough to say, I don't need a broadcaster.
Well, there's not that many people. Stephen Fry is sort of one of them, isn't he? He's sort of doing that at the moment. And Jonathan Ross is probably big enough to be able to do it.
Jonathan Ross is more adept at it, actually. Mm. He can run more of a scale. He interacts better. You know, he's just launched this Wossy book club thing, where he is doing a book club with his tweeters.
Yeah.
And that, to me, looks like somebody who's already thinking post-channel.
Yeah, okay. We'll leave that there. Talking about Twitter, you can find Janine Gibson on Twitter, and you can find me on Twitter too, if you want to follow us. John Plunkett, you haven't taken the plunge.
I'm still dormant. So every time I try and sit down, think, what shall I write? I think I'm just sitting at a computer. I'm not doing anything interesting.
The only tweets that you...
Can I confess that?
The only tweets that you get up to involve Springwatch.
Springwatch is back.
It is, which we'll come into in a second. But I should say before we come on to our TV section that what Jonathan Ross can no longer do, we can, because later in the summer we'll be hosting Media Talk Live here at the Guardian's HQ. Well, I say live, we're recording it live, and you can come and be part of the audience. The topic for debate is the digital future, and I'll be joined by a panel of social media experts and bloggers from America, including JD Lasker and others, as well as Emily Bell and the BBC's technology correspondent Rory Ketlin-Jones. There are full details on how to find out to register for free tickets to the show. Go to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Now, before we finish, it's time for a quick word from your friend of mine, Gareth McLean. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
That didn't sound very enthusiastic.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Shall we go with that again? How are you, Gareth?
Sorry, I'm fine.
Good.
I don't Twitter either because I have a job. Do you do all day that you've got time to do that?
You don't have just a few 140 characters. It's not that you blog all day. That's what you do.
Yeah, I blog all day, but not for much longer because I'm going to stand for Parliament. I'm going to join Lynn Fald's Wood in the potential death trap party.
I was trying to think of a catchphrase all the way through.
Did you not think potential death
trap?
It's a potential death trap.
Yes, I was thinking, all I could think of was that Victoria Wood sketch, Meconomy. Do you remember that one?
I do. Well, it was Strange and Saunders that made me laugh about that.
That murderously expensive electricity. I was going to talk about Springwatch. We'd mentioned Springwatch and it's back.
I think nature's boring.
So. Do you think?
Yeah.
Nature's boring?
Yeah.
Why?
I watched Springwatch.
Look at your window if you want to see nature.
Sorry, I thought I'd join in. I forgot that it was Gareth.
No, it's fine.
I've forgotten about the format. I watched Springwatch last night, and there was a bloke sitting there going, oh, just a minute ago, we had five badgers.
They had.
This is riveting. There were five badgers
had,
a minute ago.
I tell you what they had on, is they have slugs shagging. Did you not see the slugs, the slug sex?
As a committed bird watcher, I'm furious. That's why I've kept silent. I can stay silent no longer. Well, it's a fantastic public service broadcasting at its best.
Yes, absolutely.
You get little baby blue tits and some lat wings.
Pointing cameras into bird boxes.
Slow motion pictures of a goshawk. What can be better?
But the key thing about it...
They're not slow motion. It's just that boring.
That's the real speed. Who's this bloke that's taken over from Bildy?
Chris Packham, formerly of the Really Wild Show.
Really fancy him when he was on the Really, Really Wild Show.
Didn't he?
He's a hottie.
He's a total hottie.
Not anymore, he's not.
Speaking of hotties, can I just say, don't mess with the Hef. If he wants to stand for Parliament, you let him.
Hef the hottie.
Hef the hottie.
He plans to occupy the entire front bench.
Yeah, very good. I've got Simon Sharma down on my list of things to ask you about. What is it with Simon Sharma?
Well, he did that John Donne thing, didn't he? The BBC's trying to get us all interested in poetry. Poetry and nature. Oh, God, thank
heavens.
Come on,
there's a licence fee to justify.
Thank heavens for Channel 4's Coach Trip and the Great British Menu. Otherwise, I would not be. But yeah, this is as much as enthusiasm as I can sum up for the poetry.
I suppose that if we are to be enthusiastic about anything, it's Britain's Got Talent. Are you a talent watcher, Janine?
And I wouldn't say I'd necessarily sat down to watch it from beginning to end, but I think it's one of those shows that's possible to watch by osmosis.
Yeah, you don't need to see it
just
to experience it.
Breathing and generally
just by walking
being
to work, really.
I walked into work the other day and there were four computers showing some a father and son act doing Greek Irish dancing.
Oh, Stavros Flatley. Yeah, I quite like that.
It was
a bit sad that Faces of Disco got booted out until they took their tops off and then had those, that weird bit in between their chest.
Concave chest.
Yeah.
What's the...
I like those bears, the dancing bears. Simon Smith and his amazing dancing bears. No, it's not.
I like diversity.
Do you?
Yeah.
They are good.
I thought they were clever.
I'm very clever.
Badgers and goshawks. But that's the wrong show.
You're watching the wrong channel.
I don't think Doyle's going to win. I think the backlash has begun. And,
do you think?
Boyle. I could be made to look a fool.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. This is the thing. She's actually not that good.
It was a brief moment of you didn't expect that. That was the point. Yeah. You didn't see that coming, did you? And then we did see it coming, and actually she wasn't that good.
Yeah. I was very interested.
She probably will still have to win, though, won't she? Aren't they flying Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher over?
Celebrities will do anything for like a free flight, won't they? They're like MPs.
That was the most revealing thing of the week. It was when she said, will he send the private plane? You thought, oh, you will come to the Britain's Got Talent final if he sends a private plane.
I just think,
how much fun can it be being on a private plane?
What are you excited about on television this week, Gareth?
Well, I'm excited about... Well, EastEnders are courting controversy once more. And this is the story that I got a joint byline on.
Oh, right.
Was that they're doing another gay love storyline.
But aren't they doing that? They've got gays on EastEnders
already. They do, but the sort of terribly contemporary twist on this one is it involves gay Christian, who is, of course, the only gay in all Walford, with his selection of white vests, and Saeed Massoud, who's a Muslim.
Oh, so
there's supposed to be a great conflict between his sexuality and his faith. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. I can't wait.
I bet you can't.
okay, well, I think that really is it for this week. A huge thank you to everyone in the pod, Gareth McLean, John Plunkett, and thank you very much, Janine Gibson, for your return. Post your feedback on any of our topics on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk, or head over to the Facebook group, or you can go the whole hog and follow me, Matthew Wells, on Twitter. Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Goodbye. No, I don't know how the fuck you're going to edit this. So it was just... You could just fade it out.